Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast, sponsored by Sergo Guitars. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Hello there.
Jay Cross.
Hi.
And Matthew Knight.
Word.
Yes. And on this week's episode, we're going to be talking about new guitars from Ernie Ball and the next generation of digital amplification and taking loads of questions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. You can join the discussion there on facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Now, before we get started on things, we need to introduce again this week's new patrons. So thank you very much to Ruben Stockruse, to Dave Finley, to Sean DeMary, and to Carl Tucker, who has upgraded a tier. So thank you very much, everyone. Obviously, $10 tier people. You're still getting your song sung at the end, but those are the new people that have joined us on Patreon. You can join too for as little as a dollar at patreon.com/guitar nerds.
Do the people who join now,
yeah,
do their names go at the end of the song?
So I record a new song, new 10-tier debate. New 10-tier dependent.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, so the day before the podcast goes out. So I check it on Tuesday, and if there are any more, then I record a new song.
So basically, for the sanity of the $10 people who get their name read out at the end, we need more $10 people to mix up the song every week.
Yes. Well, to be honest, I have to record one pretty much every week. In fact, this week will be the first week probably this year that I haven't.
Wow,
to.
People spending the big bucks. Oh, yeah. No, I was just...
Well,
I mean,
there's only been five episodes this year.
No, that's true. So, essentially, what you're saying is, as long as you're a top-tier patron by the Tuesday... So, someone could just up their pledge, have the name read out, and then cancel it again.
Yeah, absolutely. You could
just
do that.
So that you have to record a new song.
See, I
what if they did that, like, you know... On a week off, a week on, a week off, a week on, a week off.
That's a great idea because I guess because you don't pay until the end of the month. So I guess that's a great way to get on the song is to upgrade to the 10 tier and then downgrade again before the end of the month. And I assume you'd only get charged for the.
I don't really care about that. What I care about is like people finding new ways to troll you. That's what I'm into. I'm excited about.
Well, I'm quite excited this week because I don't have to record a new song at the moment. So that's good. Less work.
What are you
going to
do with that 9 hours or whatever it is? That...
Well, actually, I'll tell you what I was thinking about editing the podcast when I get home.
So you'll have a whole free day tomorrow to do nothing.
Well, no, I'd still have stuff to do tomorrow. But,
sure.
But because I normally have to edit the podcast in the day rather than the evening because, of course, I've got to like set up a mic and like pelt a vocal into it in the middle of my house sort of
pelt
thing.
So, or pelt
pelt I pelt as well when I sing pelt. But yeah, I've got to pelt that vocal down the mic, so you know I need to do that in the day. I can't do that at night, but seeing as there are no new patrons, I think I'll maybe edit when I get home, free up some extra.
I tell you what must your neighbors be thinking?
Oh yeah,
I just
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, have you heard the song in the end?
No.
I mean, it's it is some of my best work. It's some of my best work.
I've heard Polymath, so
I've got like I made,
it's a pretty low bar.
I built the drum track from scratch from some of the drum kits that come supplied on Persona Studio One. I built that. I've got two acoustic guitars going in there, playing sort of complementary things, and a bass line and a little piano part as well.
I'm glad we pay you for this.
It's got like a chorus and everything. There's a chorus now. Like, it's the same.
Whose name gets repeated?
I think.
Or is it just you guys?
It just repeats guitar notes. Yeah. But there are harmonies. Like, I've put some real effort into it. Rather than last time, where I was just like singing a different sort of relatively naff song each week. This time I was like, I'm just going to make one good song. But the problem is, like, I realized at the moment where we are with the amount of $10 backers, is because the song's a particular length and it has two choruses within it, the names are in the verses and I have to get the names done in time for the choruses to come around. And right now...
So you're getting back to this situation.
I'm going to have to write a new song.
Or you're getting back to the situation where you have to fit everyone's name in one breath.
One breath, yeah. That's that is going to be it. Anyway, actually, before we launch into the subject matter, as we discussed last week, we have announced a new run of giveaways. So we've teamed up with Mikey Demas and Red Beard Effects to give away a Red Beard Red Mist Mark IV Overdrive pedal. So as we've done before with giveaways, we're going to be announcing the winner right here on the podcast on the 26th of February. And entries open to listeners all over the globe. There are loads of different ways you can enter. You can enter on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Patreon. You can even email us. You can go to our website and fill out the form. And there are links in the description of this podcast as well. All you've got to do is head over to your desired platform, find the post. There are loads of them. There are many posts. Some people asked last week, they were like, oh, am I supposed to be writing on this post or this post? Because I didn't make it clear. I was like, well, there are lots of posts. I've posted many different ways about this. So you can comment anywhere. I
just
will
post
find
somewhere.
It.
Just write it on a wall, like in your in your town.
Yeah, write it on a wall. I'll find it. Go to your local council office. Write it on the front of there.
We do not encourage that.
Anyway,
worth pointing out that the draw will happen on the 26th.
Yes,
but it will happen on the 26th in your ears. It will have actually happened on the 24th.
So yeah, so that's a good point.
If you're listening to this on the 25th,
yeah, you're done, mate. I'm sorry.
Unfortunately,
you can maybe give me a call.
Well, no, because it still would have been recorded by then.
Oh yeah, no, that's true. But I could like fake it. I could edit it out and put their name in instead.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds bad.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, all you've got to do to win is to what have you got to do? You've got to answer this question. You've got to name one piece of Red Beard merchandise.
You've literally got a script. I don't understand.
I've
how
lost
you meant
my place.
Struggling.
It's a small font. You've got to name one piece of Red Beard merchandise that you can buy on the Red Beard website. So to find the answer, just go to redbeardeffects.com. And we'll, of course, we're going to be using the legendary Wheel of Nerdune to decide the winner.
When do we get to that? Next week?
No, 26th of February, mate. So that's obviously not
February.
Next week, is it? Well, 24th.
I wasn't
for
listening.
26th. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Fine. Anyway, whew, there you go. So that's the giveaway done. So you know, this week we're going to talk about a load of guitar stuff. Plectrums.
Okay.
Bloody love them.
I've discovered plectrums. So
such a wally.
No. Yeah. I know. Right. So I'll preface this by saying that I've been listening to a lot of Savages. At the moment,
don't know what that is.
Really good punk band.
I doubt they're a punk band, but
I
think they're a punk band.
I'll let Jake
in the same way that
aside.
Future of the Left are a punk band.
No. These are definitely way more punky.
Look at a picture of them.
They're really good.
I'll be able to tell.
French vocalist, although she sings in English. But the bass player is amazing. The bass player, I went to see their bass player's
side project. No, that isn't a punk band
project.
I hate to break it to you, but. That looks like something out of like a fashion magazine.
They're fantastic. Please don't judge them before you've listened to them. They are absolutely wonderful. But I haven't
judged them before I listened to them. I've judged them on the fact that you like them.
Yeah. Oh, right. I see.
Which immediately means that I'm not going to like them.
So my precursor for listening to music is whether or not they're wearing like black suits.
Right. Okay.
That's why I listen to Interpol.
So you are judging them on what they look like, but Mark's not allowed to.
But it's different.
Okay.
Anyway, they're really good. Their bass player, I've been to see, she's has a side project. I can't remember the name of the side project, where it's just two bass players.
Okay.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. But
that's not a banjo.
I've,
that's a guitar.
No, it's a bass. It's not a banjo. But
Two banjos, I'm in.
I've always really loved in her trouble. Bass tone, and I've started listening to that band loads more, and I was like, man, you know what, I really like this. And I was thinking about other bass players that I like and other music that I like, and I was like, most of the bass tones that I really like are pick tones.
Yeah, J Cross, big fan.
Yeah, of course, massive fan. Matt of Freeman. J Cross bass lines. Yeah, I like
J Cross again.
It's a little bit tasteless sometimes, Freeman, but yeah, it's good. But it is a bit too much. It's a bit over the top, Matt Freeman. But anyway, this was just...
Get out.
Like, it's such wonderful, clangy P-bass plectrum tones. I was like, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to learn to play with a pick. So this week, whenever I'm sitting down to play, I've been playing with a pick. And man, it is just... It's
much easier.
No, it's much harder for me.
What?
But it's rejuvenating. Well, it's much harder because I don't know where to put my hand.
What you did with your hand there?
Yeah. That was a picking motion,
where,
Jay. That was a
picking
motion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
I'd say do it in the comfort of your own home.
But I found that, I really love the tone, and it's actually made me creative. Now, I can't play as quickly. I can't do any of sort of the fills or complicated stuff quite like I can finger style.
None of this makes sense.
But I'm really enjoying the tone and really enjoying being more creative. So I think I've discovered plectrums, and I think 0.73, I think
Dunlop
the
Greens.
Well, my ones are some lovely Walrus Audio ones that are these blue ones that came in a lovely little sort of Altoid style tin. They seem to be about 0.73. We got them in some sort of a goodie bag.
I'm looking right now.
Walrus Audio, but they're very good. I think they're about 0.73. I know that because
7.5s.
Oh, 7.5. Because I also have. I have some yellow Boss ones, Matt, that I think are 0.73.
Do you only use free picks?
Well, no, I have like I've still got. We've got to do another giveaway for the Gravity Guitar Nets plectrums. Those 1.5 true ones, but I mostly only own free picks. But I realise, I don't know, I've got boxes and boxes of plectrums at house, like boxes full of plectrums from different brands. Because every time we get sent something, they send us like a pack of plectrums, and then when it comes to companies that also make plectrums like Dunlop or Ernie Ball, they just send us all the plectrums they do every time they do new plectrums. So I have boxes and boxes of picks that just don't get used. So now I'm using them. 0.73s. They're good.
I'm surprised. I would have thought that'd be
2.3 mil, mate.
Yeah, I just...
In fact, my picks are not 2.3. Let me have a look here. Sorry, 3.5. Oh. That's what you want.
You're using a house brick.
Yeah.
But this is the thing that confuses me about
that's
about
thicker
really
than some of the strings.
It seems to me
most of the strings.
It seems to me like you get less tone the thicker the plectrum. That's what it feels like to me.
No.
It just sounds more like you're hitting it with something rather than actually getting
the
note.
Why I go for the Dunlop Green. It's the nice in between.
So what is a Dunlop Green?
They are 8/8.
Right.
So it's in between the sort of ones that are basically just cut out of a piece of A4 paper. And then also what Matt uses.
Right. So I like the Dunlop. Dunlop do grey ones that have grips on them, which I think is quite important if you get sweaty. And the 0.88. Yes, Jay's just passing me one.
No. That's a Fender plectrum.
Oh, that's a Fender copy of the
no
one. Oh, right. I mean, yes.
It's a completely original design.
That's a 1 mil, Jay. It does say 1 mil.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah, 1 mil.
But yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like these ones with grip. I think grip seems to be important. Certainly, I get sweaty when I play. So I think whilst I'm enjoying this smooth plectrum at home, I'm probably going to need to get something with a little bit of grip for live use. But, you know.
So whilst we're talking about plectrums, I'm going to use this opportunity to jump in and talk about plectrums. Something that actually very cool that Fender released.
You're in charge of plectrums, right?
My plectrum manager, yeah, right. That's right. Something that Fender released a little while ago that I never brought up because I'm the only one who cares about it. But now that you're talking about it, I'm going to jump in. So I think it was at Winston.
Is it an electric plectrum? Like an electric toothbrush?
Electrum. No.
A plectrum.
So...
Electrum.
Electrum.
I'm copyrighting that.
There you go. So Winter Nam last year, Fender released some picks called Duratone. And basically, I got loads of questions about them. People saying, why are they weird thicknesses? Why are they different sizes? You know, they're not just what you would expect, which is, you know, 0.88, 0.73, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason for that is I'll hand this one to you that I have in my hand.
Thank you.
You'll notice that it's got the 70s logo on as opposed to the spaghetti logo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And the gauges are 0.46,
Is this 7.6?
That is 9.6.
9.6.
So it's 0.46, 0.71, 0.96. And basically, the gauges that the picks came out in are the gauges that were available when Fender first started doing plectrums.
Right.
In the 70s.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think
so
it's really
like
cool.
Vintage correct plectrums.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they come in like Fender colours. So there's like surf green and it's not really Fiesta red, but that's what it's called.
This is taking like vintage correct to the next level. Yeah, I'm really into it.
I really like it. I think it's a really cool little story. And it is exactly the sort of thing that I would have loved to have found out while I was working in a guitar shop. Because people come in all the time and they're like, oh, have you got any picks? And it's always just like, yeah, they're over there. You know, there's no story to them. I think it's cool. And
now
I can tell by the fact that everyone else has switched
vintage
off.
Vintage correct pitch.
That's why I didn't talk
about
it.
Do they come in 3.5 mil?
No, but what if I just get you
Matt,
three
just use
picks?
Your thumb. It's the
I'll
same
just get you
thickness.
but that's the whole point. It's like an extension of my thumb. It's like I've got a giant thumb for playing guitar. It's great. Yeah.
Just hit it with a hammer. And then it'll get bigger. That's what I saw on Tom and Jerry.
What do you guys think about curly cables?
No.
Speaking of vintage correct stuff.
Never.
Why not?
Well, because like they're not... They say they're like 3 meters, but they're actually about a meter because it's all coiled up.
It depends. Right. So the Fender ones that are available are 9.5 meters.
Right, so that's okay. Quite a lot. So that's a lot
but
of tonal
only
degradation.
But it's actually more like...
3 meters,
more
yeah,
like three, yeah.
I just find that if you plug them into an amp head, then if you want to walk to the front of the stage, they'll just pull the amp head off. Mm. Not for me. Yeah. I don't see the point. I mean, they look cool, but
do you think you're gonna get like tonal degradation as well at the sort of lengths that they have to be?
I mean, you've heard the music.
Also,
I play. It's pretty.
sorry. Who is plugging a guitar straight into an amplifier?
Jimi Hendrix.
Oh my yeah. Good.
Well, he wasn't actually,
no.
But yeah.
No,
sometimes.
Absolutely not.
Of course,
no one's plugging straight into it. No one's going straight into an amp head. Literally no one's doing that. They're going into a pedal board. So your argument is completely defunct.
Okay, well, it pulls the lead out of your pedal board then.
But that's the thing. It's like people say cable loss, tone loss. It's like once you're plugged into a pedal board, there's a buffer. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it does if you're using a 50-meter cable at the other end.
Yeah, so would you...
If you want to look cool, don't use a curly cable.
Really? You yeah. don't think they look cool?
No. And they get tangled worse than normal cables. They end up like Christmas lights.
It's not for me.
Yeah, really. Oh, I've never had one. There's one like at my house that turned up in the gig bag of a guitar I bought, but it doesn't work.
Do you want one? I've got loads.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll get a curly cable. Okay. I actually do need to do some new cable purchasing.
Okay.
There's a question for listeners. What cables does everyone use? Because I always use the Fender kettle-y ones. You know, you can get those black sort of kettle lead Fender ones.
I believe I've used the same guitar lead since 2008.
Really? I have to replace mine like relatively... I mean, because they get trodden on, not because there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah, I mean, mine basically never leave the house. Yeah. But that's not true, actually. The one that I use for live...
I played a gig once.
...only gets used live. And yeah.
What do you mean the one you use?
I use one cable. Straight to the amp, isn't it? That's all you need.
Oh,
why would you need more than that?
I hate you.
I'm a bass player. Why do you need effects? What do you think you are? Guitarist?
How do you tune?
You tune at the start.
You
tune at the start. And the set's 20 minutes long. Your guitar can't go out of tune that quickly.
It's impossible. I walk over to Dan Grace and I go, Dan Grace is there playing guitar on the side of the stage, like tuning up and down. I go,
Can I just
plug into your tuner? So then I plug into his tuner, I tune up, then I go and have
that
a beer.
It's awful. And then we're supposed to be back. A professional podcast. Yeah. We're supposed to be like telling people how to.
I have never used a tuner on stage when I've been playing bass.
Have you not?
No, never.
You are the worst.
That's a lie. I had a rack tuner.
You did have a rack tuner.
I went completely the other way at one point.
Sorry, wait.
At one point, I was like, oh, yeah, we're doing lots of gigs and that. What I need is a wireless system and a rack tuner. So I did that, and then I realised that those two, they were 1U each, and then the Mark bass head that was 2U. I was like, I've gone from having no tuner and a tiny little portable head that I can basically carry with one hand to this huge box that doesn't really do that much more. I could just have no tuner and a really long cable, and that's basically the same thing.
Right.
So I went back to that, and my life was much better.
You should have used a TU-1000.
It was the Korg one you had.
Yeah, I had a Korg DT1000, oh. I believe it was called.
Right.
Digital tuner.
Yeah.
1000.
Wow.
All you need is a cable. Basically, that's all we're saying. Get yourself a long cable. Job done.
Stop telling people. Stop instructioning people.
When I first started playing shows, I was going into my very first band. I was using a Line 6 Spider.
Is that your Korn covers band?
No, I never did a Korn covers band. I did buy a 7-string, but I never did a Korn covers band. No, this was the ska punk band that I was in.
Right. Did you play the 7-string in that ska punk band?
No. But I had to use the Line 6, like Cat 5 cable,
yes.
Channel selector.
Oh, wow.
And it was such a nightmare because it's... so I always got annoyed by the fact that it had 4 channels.
Right.
And it was like, well, but what happens if I'm, you know, a bit pissed and I go up instead of down? So basically I had my clean sound, which was in channel 1 and 3. And then I had my drive sound that was in channel 2 and 4. And so it didn't matter whether I stepped up or down. Now it still went to the right
channel.
That
is intelligent. That is smart. That's brilliant. You know, I do a similar thing now with my MS3 because the MS3, you've got banks 1 to 4. But if you hit, and because, you know, I use the switcher, but I actually don't have that many tones. So I actually only use the 4 tones. I just have clean, drive, ring mod, and reverb.
Of course. Yeah. The classics.
Yeah. Can't believe you use a clean tone.
Yeah. Well, no. The clean tone, it just means...
It's just for tuning.
It runs into a drive pedal before it hits the MS3. So the drive is just an extra drive. But anyway, that's the MS3. So actually, I don't ever need to bank on the MS3. But if you hit pedals 1 and 2 or 3 and 4 together, it will bank. So what I've done is set at least sort of 3 or 4 of the banks to either side.
Yeah, nice.
To exactly the same. So it doesn't matter. Because that's been problematic before when I've sort of hit over to a bank and it's like been something that I've been experimenting with on the next bank. So it's like all the reverbs and delays and you know, a vibrato all of a sudden on top of everything. So there you go.
I mean, isn't that just
no one noticed. Yeah.
You know, it'll be easier. Cable straight into the amp.
yes, fine. Anyway, should we do some news? There's not a massive amount of news this week, which is fantastic.
Well, before we do that, then I want to talk about a couple of things that I did this week.
Oh, do you? I'm so sorry, right, Jay. That is
it's
so
all
rude.
About Joe.
Yeah,
it's all
so
about
rude. But actually, if you hadn't apologised, then it would have seemed more natural, and you wouldn't have looked like this total idiot that you are. Despite
like
the fact that I said I've got a couple of things to talk about this week,
it's
Joe.
It's because you didn't add them to the document.
I don't need to add them to the document. I told you.
Joe's all about the document. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. So I went to Amsterdam this week. I went to Paradiso, which is a really nice venue. Sorry?
A cafe.
No. But so I tell you what, another thing, we went at lunchtime, we went to this vegan place and had a very nice burger. And as we were leaving, I was like, can you recommend like a good place to get a coffee, please? And the waitress was like, you mean... where does the best weed? And I'm like looking at me like nodding her head.
Like,
and I was like,
you're English.
And she's like, you mean where does the best weed? And I was like, no, like where does the best coffee? And she went, oh, I don't know.
Starbucks.
So like we just ended up going like to a coffee place. But I ended up going to Amsterdam and I saw Supergrass, who are a band that I didn't think I knew a huge amount about. And I ended up going because one of my mates was going, but he forgot that he didn't realize his passport had run out of, was out of date. So I paid £50 to have his name turned over to my name on the plane ticket. And then I went with his two mates who he was supposed to be going with and had a bloody good time.
Amazing.
Paradiso, quality venue. Really, really good. I've heard a lot of people talk about it. Mark, you have been.
I played there.
Yep, played in the small venue, right?
Yeah, the little downstairs basement.
Yeah, in the toilet.
No, I'd love to tell you, sure, if you could actually get away with that.
I did play there.
Yeah.
But it was in the small room. There's like 4 venues in there, I think.
Right.
And yeah, we played in the small one. But it was nice. It's one of the only times I've had a dressing room like just the band. My band has had their own separate dressing room.
Yeah.
And I remember it being a good gig.
That's good.
We played there the day after we played in a place called Hoorn, which is a small town where the toilets were on stage. So that was quite the difference.
What?
Wow.
Was there a door?
Yeah, but oh, okay. Actually...
Oh, I pictured like a completely open toilet.
There was two toilet doors, men's and women's at the time, and we were sort of playing, and then we realised actually the men's one, the door is just off. It's like off the hinges. So no one could use that. So there was just the toilet on stage. People just queuing on stage to go to the toilet. Next night in Paradiso, one of the best venues I've ever played in. It's ups and downs.
But yeah, it was really good. And Supergrass, as it turned out, bloody good rock band.
Yeah.
I thought I only knew like one or two songs, but I knew basically the whole thing. They were great.
Really cool gear as well. Gaz Coombs has got a really interesting setup.
Tell me more. Oh, I was stood at the back. Also, I was very pissed. But like mainly, I was stood at the back.
Yeah, he's got some cool stuff. Matt Knight, how much do you know about Gaz Coombs' gear as well?
All I remember is their merch when they first came out was they had like t-shirts that said Supergrass, your second favourite band.
So good.
So Gaz Coombs plays, and he probably played it at this because it's something that he's played quite late in his career, his Kraft Ambassador.
Okay.
Which is a really interesting really interesting guitar, like a single pickup, single humbucking guitar with the humbucker sort of in the middle but towards the neck position of the guitar, like a really absolutely very very that sort of 60s
it looks like a Sears. Weird Burns. Like something Burns.
Well, he also plays lots of Burns as well, doesn't he? He's been known to play quite a lot of Burns, which is cool.
So this is different to Kelly Kraft, who is the United States ambassador to Canada, which is the only thing that I can find when I Google it.
It's a very cool guitar. But yeah, he has he's played the Burns. He's played a Burns Dream and a Burns Custom Legend, which is just the. Right. You know, the white and taut
Titan Warp.
Yeah, that one.
And also a classic guitar for a kind of like 90s to late 90s rock band to be playing, which is like a Fender Tele Plus, is it? Where they've got the lace sensor humbuckers
great.
In there.
What a guitar.
Like, that's a guitar that doesn't exist out of that time frame. Like, probably about, I mean, when did that guitar come out? Maybe like 95?
So basically,
like 95 to 2000, basically.
Gaz Coombs and Johnny Greenwood just bought them all.
Oh, yeah, kind of.
Gaz Coombs, actually, because he was endorsed by Burns at the time, and Burns obviously do so much more than just the guitars. They offer servicing and stuff. So actually, his Tele Plus, he got refinished by the Burns factory.
How do you know so much about Supergrass?
Say, how do you know this?
Because Jay said he saw him. So before we podcasted, I looked up some stuff about
him. He's actually done some exercise. You're making it come across very natural.
Yeah, very good. Makes a change. But the other thing that was really funny about being in Amsterdam was whilst Supergrass were playing in Paradiso, Liam Gallagher was playing at like some big arena,
right.
Also in Amsterdam. And so the city centre was filled with absolute nutcases. It was so ridiculous. We went into this one pub that was where like my mate Ali, who I was there with, he's like, he goes to Paradiso quite regularly, he really liked it, and he was like, this is the best pub to go to, like the beer's quite cheap, but it also is like, it's never mad. And we went in there and it was just filled with geezers in parkas. It was so ridiculous. And like,
were there a lot of Vespas on the curbs outside?
I don't think they rode their Vespas to Amsterdam. No, I think they probably went EasyJet.
That's like, the thing, the one chance I could have seen Oasis, I just went, you know what? It was at V Festival in 2005.
Right.
And I was like, a crowd's just going to be rubbish, isn't it?
It was like...
I saw the Chemical Brothers and it was way better.
it was like really intense, but like, so we went to a different pub and they also realized that there was like loads of Oasis fans there, so they just kept playing Oasis songs, and whenever an Oasis song came on in the pub went absolutely bonkers.
Wow.
It was like at one point when She's Electric came on,
oh,
someone pulled out a tambourine and started playing along. Yeah.
And halfway through the tambourine.
Halfway through the song, someone else pulled out a tambourine. So there was two tambourines.
That's the
just
thing
playing
with
along.
Big jackets like Parker's.
Yeah, you can put anything in there.
Fit a tambourine in there.
So all in all, bloody good. And I tell you what, Oasis, banging. Like, I was
let's not do this.
I can't believe you've only just discovered this.
Well, not only just. I mean, I have bought a story, Morning Glory, back in the day, but like...
Worse, they're not a band.
First three albums, brilliant. Third one, not so good, but...
Absolutely.
You know.
First two. Oh. Third one's a bit...
What's the third one?
It's like the opposite of music for me.
No.
I can't think of a band I can't stand more.
They're
so good.
It's just all turned up to 10. I don't see what's the problem.
Mm. Great songwriter.
Like, Noel Gallagher's like... attitude towards guitar is more is more. It's basically Spinal Tap, just more is more, turn it all up.
What you got to remember is Joe hates choruses, like songs that you can remember once it's finished. Joe's like, no, absolutely not.
I don't like, I can remember bottom feeding music.
I can remember what the song was 10 seconds after it's finished. Right. I don't like it.
It is literally that I can appreciate music at a slightly higher level than three chords.
I'd say lower level.
Wow. It's four chords in Wonderwall, mate.
Yeah, there you go.
So also, Dan, speaking of Dan Grace, Dan was there with me and he was letting me into the secrets of being in a wedding covers band. And he said, like, if you're getting towards the end of the set and you don't want to play any more songs, you do Wonderwall, because basically people start like getting off with each other.
And that's then, the end.
And nobody's like, right, yeah, let's have another song. Like, you finish with Wonderwall and it's, you know, you're going to be out there in about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Very cool.
Smart. Yeah. Right. Let's do some news. So I'm actually going to start the news in a slightly different order than you guys might think, from the list. Yeah, so Matt, why don't we start with you?
Okay, what do you want to start with?
I want to talk about, well, it's up to you. What do you want to talk about, Matt?
I tell you what, let's talk about Ernie Ball, because they're the blood eat best.
Yes, and this has actually been on the list since NAMM, and this is a very exciting thing and something we should give some time to.
Yes, actually, just on their website now. So the one of the guitars we're going to talk about is not actually listed on their site now, but they do have a blog from the NAMM sort of launch press release of everything that was new. So the first thing, and probably the biggest news, is they have released the Saber. So the Saber is a kind of reissue, as it were, of the 80s model that they had.
Oh, I didn't know this was ever a guitar.
Yes. Previously, one of the... if you look at it, you sort of get that sort of vibe. But now, having the last 30 years of kind of like boutique guitar builders like Sur, it looks much more modern. But it was actually a model way back in the 80s as well. So effectively, what you've got here is a two humbucker, a Akume body, maple-topped... double cutaway, like super strat, I guess, or it's it kind of looks like a modern day Sur, I guess, if you're going to look at it now. But all of the features that you'd expect on a Music Man, so Schelling Locker tuners, they're custom designed trem, you've got five-way pickup selector, volume, tone, and they just look super, super nice. There's one Cobra Burst, which is kind of like a light brown to black, looks absolutely amazing. It's definitely probably the more subtle. You've got Bougie Burst, which I think is their kind of like, it's like a red and black. Honeysuckle, which I'll be honest, I'm not a fan of. It's a very, very kind of pale Les Paul-esque color. And then Blue Moonstone, which is like a very, very greeny blue. But yes, I think this is their kind of like modern rock guitar kind of
spec wise, this is so similar to the Stingray guitar.
Yes, yeah. I mean, all of their guitars follow a very, very similar spec.
Aesthetically, this is very modern, whereas the Stingray is probably their most traditional-looking guitar.
Yes, this one, I mean, obviously, again, bizarre that the fact that this is kind of like a reissue. Obviously, I'm sure they've done a few things to the body. They're saying here it's got a slightly wider neck than some of their other models, slightly contoured body. I'd imagine it'll have probably quite a thin neck profile. They don't really go into much details on the website at the moment. Fortunately, didn't get a chance to actually see it at NAMM. I'm sure there's going to be some reviews coming out soon. But like I said, that Cobra looks absolutely wicked. It looks like the Cobra and the Honeysuckle come with a roasted maple neck, while the Bougie Burst and the Moonstone come with a rosewood fretboard. Although actually the Blue Moonstone looks like it might come with an ebony fretboard.
It does look a darker shade than the other
one. It does, but they're not, again, the website at the moment doesn't offer a huge amount of details on those. I think I saw a price about $2,799.
In pounds, yeah, probably, because they're $3,200.
Right, yeah, so about $2,799. Not sure when they're going to be landing in stores, although I did see Rabia had one the other day, so I'd imagine they've probably got some marketing stock out there. But yeah, definitely keen to try this. I think it's a very, very cool guitar. Not sure how the pickups are wired. Be interesting to see how they've done the five-way switching on that. I'm sure there's probably just some sort of parallel routing options when it comes to like tapping individual pickups. But yeah, definitely if you want to kind of go for something with that kind of like Sur type boutique vibe, a little bit more rocky with the two humbuckers, and you don't want to go down the route of something like the Mariposa. Now, on top of that, they obviously did a bunch of new colours, which I thought was quite cool.
Hefty price tag on the Sabre, just before we move on to the colours.
$2,799?
Isn't
the Mariposa similar? $2,900?
Yeah, but that's the Mariposa. That's the Mariposa.
So Omar can... to be honest, for me, I think they're all very reasonably priced because they all come in around the same price. Right. So it's like... when you look at Gibson and then you're looking at like a whole range of Gibsons and you on the surface they all look really similar, but the prices like vary massively, where this is like you pretty much know you're in for about $2,500 to $3,000 for a Music Man, and you've got a whole range of different choices, different neck profile from different bodies, different pickups straight off the bat. So I think 2,799 seems to be about the standard for most guitars now, realistically.
From Music Man, yeah.
No, I think there's, you know, custom shops, lower end of the custom shops, same for the Gibsons. But then again, Sur's are around the same sort of price. A lot of people tend to price it like 2,799. I think it's like the nice price point under three grand. I think once you go over $3,000, you tend to get a huge drop off.
Yeah.
But that sort of sub 3,000 tends to be a far more attractive price.
I think it's interesting that Music Man have kind of, this is very much going after that Sur market, isn't it? We were only picking that brand actually, but you know, to compare them to, but that sort of run of premium quality, they tend to have quilt tops, you know, that sort of thing.
I think the good thing about this and having, you know, us been to the factory and seen the way they're made, obviously I have a much deeper appreciation for Music Man guitars, having seen the effort they put into building them, but also the quality of the wood stock that they buy. The flame maple that comes up on Music Man necks and bodies is just absolutely unreal. And it's roasted off-site. They use really, really good high quality woods. Obviously they are all engineers to the core, so these guitars are always like absolute perfection.
That's the thing. We do definitely give Music Man an awful lot of airtime on this podcast.
Great.
That's why I'm saying it's because they're just so very, very consistently extremely high quality.
This episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergold Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergold Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergold dealer at shergoldguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergold dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergold will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoldguitars.com. Shergold Guitars. Be your own original.
Yeah, it was a Music Man Luke 2. So when I had my first job in a guitar shop, that was the only expensive guitar we had on display. I can't even remember how we came about it, but it was a kind of blue, that bluey, greeny sort of pearl colour they had. It had the EMGs in it. It was a great guitar, and I always felt the neck profile was the winner with Music Man, and that's just never changed. It's always been amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, on top of that, they've got new Majesty colours. They actually did a couple of Ball Family Reserve Music Mans that John Petrucci has been promoting on Instagram, which no doubt have already sold, the Majesty being their number one selling guitar, I think.
Really? You reckon?
Yes, when we went there, they were like, we make John Petrucci guitars like all day long. You've got to think, like, John Petrucci is like an absolutely massive influence in the guitar playing world. And I think still, like, Dream Theater, if you look at the Dream Theater gigs in like Europe compared to like the gigs they play in like Japan and places like that, they are playing absolutely monstrous gigs. And John Petrucci's still just like a huge guitar hero.
A huge guy. He's so ripped.
Oh yeah, he's absolutely stacked.
Is it? I didn't think. I never
really
knew
stacked.
That.
Yeah, big beard, hair, big muscles.
He's the dream. He's the dream man.
Massive pectorals, big biceps. What are the muscles called in your shoulders? In the top bits.
Your lats.
Is that what that's called? A lat.
No, I mean, deltoids. No deltoids.
Oh, he's got big deltoids, like really rounded deltoids.
I don't think I've got any muscles in my shoulders.
Yeah, honestly, it looks like he's wearing a padded blazer, but it's not. It's just a t-shirt and his arms.
Lats is like across your back, I think.
Oh, right. Okay.
I just did a quick bit of research.
That was quick.
But he is the bloody best. And with that, he's released some new colours, including Pink Sand on his Majesty, which is kind of like a very, very... It doesn't look pink in the pictures. It's kind of a very odd pink. It's definitely not shell pink. Pink Sand, Red Phoenix, Smoked Pearl, and Ember Glow. It looks like the 6 and 7 string versions.
Can you describe what those colours are?
Pink Sand is... How would I describe that? I would say it's more red than it is pink. But it has the... Flame Maple Shield in the middle, which is in a very, very similar pinky color. Red Phoenix it looks a bit like a pearlescent, almost not burgundy, not, but I'm thinking burgundy mist. What's the red color? Not a bit like Candy Cola. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, I liked Candy Cola. I was a fan.
Smoked Pearl. See, I think these kind of look like those pearlescent car colors. Smoked Pearl is like a gray to black with a sort of grey flame maple shield.
See, when you say smoked pearl, I'd have thought like sort of a smoker's Olympic white.
No.
Like my base.
Yeah. It's just like dirty yellow, isn't it?
When I was talking to Rabia recently about his new signature Chapmans, obviously the colour...
They're very burly.
He was just like...
I don't mean like
John Petrucci.
Like John Petrucci, yeah.
he was like, I can just make up the colour names. So I'm pretty sure 90% of most of the colour names out there just totally made up. I mean, they're just like, what should we call it? I don't know.
Radiator table.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then Ember Glow is a red to orange to black sort of burst with the sort of flame maple shield in the middle. No changes to the specs, just the colours. The JP15, which is his sort of double cutaway, double humbucker.
Lovely guitar.
Flame maple necked guitar has come in one new colour, which is Cerulean Paradise? Cerulean Paradise?
Cerulean, I think it is.
Cerulean. Which basically looks like the ocean. So if you really like looking at the sea and playing guitar while lifting weights, this might be the John Petrucci model for you.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been spending all your life living in a cerulean
Paradise.
Then we've also got the Luke 3 killer guitar. This is the Luke model, but with the two humbuckers, and they have some amazing new finishes. Best finishes at NAMM. Ocean Sparkle, which is basically a...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Kind of seafoam green sparkle, fuchsia sparkle, possibly the best color ever in the world of sparkles, and olive pearl, not so fun.
Yeah, I bet
kind
it
of
is.
It kind of looks like a sparkly olive,
forest. Oh, yeah, that sounds like, oh, I'm into that.
If you like olives and lifting weights, then this guitar might be. Oh, no, wait. I don't think Luke lifts weights.
Oh, no, yeah. What does Luke do?
He plays guitar. And has done for about 50 years.
And on some of the biggest tracks known to man.
Well, like physically big.
No,
yeah,
most popular. Oh, tracks. Right. Most popular.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. But
I did actually get to see the Fuchsia Sparkle very quickly when I was walking around NAMM, and that colour is amazing. They also do the HSS version, which come in Cherry Burst and Luscious Green.
Luscious Green.
Yeah, it kind of looks a bit like a swamp, that one.
Oh, yeah,
bit,
I'm into that.
Yeah, I'm in.
Luscious Green. Sounds like the sort of colour you can lick.
I don't know. Okay. I think, if you were licking things this colour, you'd be very sick. Oh. It's not the kind of green that you want to lick. Stingray Specials now come in Fire Mist Silver, Ghost Wood, Ghost Pepper,
and
Burnt Amber.
Have you ever seen a Ghost Wood?
Yes!
I haven't, because there isn't actually a picture on this press release, but if anyone can see one, please send a picture ASAP. Right. And then the Stingray 5s also come in Tectonic Blue Sparkle, which looks amazing.
These colours, this is ridiculous.
Maroon Mist, Fire Mist Silver, and Burnt Amber.
Do you think it's about time we came up with a new Guitar Nerds colour?
Yeah.
Like, Ghostwood?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a Ghostwood?
No, I'm not sure about that one.
Cutlasses also come in Ghostwood now, as well as... Maroon Mist.
Right.
The Stingray RS also now comes in Ghostwood. And finally, we get to the Valentines, which now come in TV Yellow.
Yes.
Classic what? Natural.
I didn't know that.
And Shell Pink.
Yes, of course they do.
That's the Guitar Nerds guitar.
It all goes back to when we met him at NAMM, said, listen to Guitar Nerds podcast, mate. Your guitar just won Gear of the Year. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'll give it a go on the tour bus. He clearly rang them afterwards, went, these guys are the bloody best.
Shell Pink.
I want two new colours, Ghostwood and Shell Pink. and there we go, Shell Pink with the trem as well. That's the best spec. Pink Valentine with a trem.
No.
And that's it. Music, loads for Music Man. Lots of new
colours.
Loads
of colours. That's what Music Man are about this year. New colours. And, you know, obviously.
But the TV Yellow looks good. with the tortoiseshell scratch plate as well. I'm like, yeah, that is a cool guitar. It's a cool color.
TV yellow is a fantastic color. Did we vote it best color above?
Did we do a vote on best color?
We did a Patreon.
That's
episode.
Ridiculous.
I don't think it was TV yellow. I think it was butterscotch blonde.
I was the only one defending shell pink in the end. I don't even like shell pink, but I felt we should stick to our guns. I like you two.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, ridiculous. Anyway,
what they got to do with it?
Can I steal a bit of news on here?
I actually was going to you next, Mark Packham.
I'm going to steal a bit of news that's marked down for Matt, because I also want to talk about a brand who are releasing some stuff in great colours.
Do it.
Kramer are back, and according to their website, Kramer are back, and according to the website, they're made to rock hard.
Their website's fantastic.
Make of that what you will. I've actually, talking about their website being fantastic, while I've been doing the research on this and looking at the different models and stuff, I've just kept the homepage open in like a separate tab because it is wicked.
It is great. Like,
that's a
great
background.
KramerGuitars.com. It is, every second will be worth it.
So
is that guy shaving his armpits?
It's weird just that a man's got his arms in the air. But Kramer are back and they're fully leaning into their sort of heritage as crazy 80s rock machines. And like the front page of the site is like all kind of like AC/DC font and like bright colours, purples, blues, like flames, all that kind of stuff.
They
it's
are
awesome.
Nailing it.
But so what they've done is, because Kramer Guitars, I believe, have been sort of, they're owned by Gibson and they've kind of been like bumbling along in the background a little bit with, you know, Epiphone being a main sub-brand and Gibson obviously being the main thing. And I think it's just been like, Gibson have owned them, they've released a new guitar every now and then. But what they've done now is kind of a clear delineation in the two types of guitars they're doing.
Three types of guitar.
One of them's like a
modern classic and custom, isn't it?
Custom graphics collection is another sort of thing, I think, because I don't think they're like regular things that you can buy. Like on the website, for example, there's one guitar on there that's got some crazy flames on it, but it's mostly the original collection and modern collection. So in the original collection, they're all basically super strats.
So all we care about from Kramer historically is the Beretta.
Yeah, kind of. But the Beretta is like their strat shape. But then there's like a ton of different variants on that within the original collection. So for example, the good thing as well is a real range of prices and it's all pretty simple. So starting off with the Focus VT211S, which is their like beginner's guitar. And they're like $200-ish. $191 is the price that they've got listed. And come in a cool range of colours. Again, they're really leaning into this like bright, colourful branding.
It's very much a Strat though, the VT.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a like a HSS Strat. It's, you know, it's your like Squire equivalent or, you know, whatever equivalent.
Jay's rolling his eyes.
It's your beginner's guitar equivalent. I don't know what else to say, but it's got like...
Like Fender have never done a single cut.
Vintage style trim and, you know, HSS. And comes in a few different colours. Ruby red, pewter grey, candy blue and purple. So with all these, they're leaning...
Starcaster's still in your catalogue, is it, Jay?
They're leaning in heavily. I'm just going to keep talking and ignore what Joe's saying. They're leaning in heavily to these bright colours and like crazy kind of 80s style stuff. So up from there, you've got the Beretta Special, which is a single humbucker maple neck Strat.
We need to stop on this one. The Beretta Special, what a guitar.
Looks fantastic.
Hockey stick headstock.
Yeah.
And available in the best colour in the world.
Purple.
Mauve. Yeah, I mean, it's a mauve style purple.
And they're not loads of money. They're $254.
Maple fretboard, angled humbucker. It's an angled zebra humbucker in there. So angled like a Strat position humbucker and, you know, just an ordinary Strat bridge with a single volume guitar. That is one of the coolest guitars I've ever seen.
It looks
great.
And then up from there...
And how much did you say they are?
What did I say? $254.
Are you talking pounds or dollars? Yeah.
Dollars.
$254.
Let me just double check that. What did I say? $254.
I need to buy one of these.
Yeah.
Considering I lost bidding on that...
you got some money to throw around.
Telecaster base just before we started here. Why not? I'm going to get one of these.
So there is also the Beretta Vintage, which basically is a very similar guitar, but it's got a Floyd Rose on it or double locking system on there. And then it basically go up as far as you want. You've then got the 84, which I think is a more kind of like... vintage correct version.
It's very offset, isn't it?
Oh, okay. So it's like some more... It's different headstock, and it's also got a Seymour Duncan humbucker in there rather than just, I'm guessing, their own.
And it's a proper Floyd in there as well.
Yeah. Oh, no, there is a Seymour Duncan in the Beretta vintage as well. So, yeah, not too much between those two. And all the way right up to, I guess, the SM1 is probably top of the range, which is a much more modern take on it. It's like... contoured body rather than just the regular.
A lot
kind of
contours
flat.
There.
Yeah, very, very more Ibanez-y.
All the inlays.
Yeah, I would say it's actually more like a kind of Jackson.
Oh, yeah,
vibe.
I guess it is. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got Kramer headstock inlays on the frets. And on the 12th fret, you've even got a full headstock that says Kramer on it. I'm into it. This one is like, I think, is a bit more serious than the others, I would suggest. I mean, it looks cool. Again, finishes, they do orange crush, which looks really nice. And they've got like a here we go, maximum steel.
Ooh, what color is that?
It's actually my stage name. It's like a pewter.
I think I've seen a movie with that guy.
Yeah. I won't ask. So whole range of guitars in the originals. Going onto the website, it's an experience in itself.
You missed the Jersey Star.
Yeah, so the Jersey Star is, I think, the most expensive one they do, which is a 3 pickup.
It's the 84 body shape, which is kind of a heavily contoured sort of super strat, sort of almost offset.
The deal with this one, which I only found out from someone that I work with, because it was like his dream guitar in the 80s, and they don't mention it on the website, I'm guessing because they probably can't. The Jersey Star was the Bon Jovi guitar.
They're from
signature of Richie Sambora, I believe.
Oh, that makes sense, because Jersey, right?
Yeah, so I believe that it was the Richie Sambora Jersey Star from Kramer in the 80s. He obviously then moved to, I'm guessing, Fender.
He had a Fender signature for a while. I don't know what he has now.
And yeah, I'm guessing they've bought this back. They can obviously
Richie Sambora.
Did
you say what he has?
Yeah,
now?
What does he play now?
A Les Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Wasn't there? We talked about
I
it.
Interviewed
at one
him.
Yeah,
remember?
Didn't you interview him? And he had a 59.
Yeah.
He went, "Do you want to have a look?"
No. But
he was drunk.
What's his like signature model right now? Because like he's gone through a number of them. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I know for a while there was an ESP, which was like a weird. It looked like a Gibson Sonics, but with the bottom bit cut off. It's quite weird. And there's obviously the Strats, which had the star inlays as well. And then, yeah, this Jersey Star.
Right, okay.
I've always thought, apart from the Sonics one, I've always thought his signature guitars have been quite cool. But, yeah, I don't know what he's playing right now. But,
quite cool.
So, anyway, the Jersey Star, great-looking guitar. And then they also do...
Just before you move on. Interesting pickup selector positioning. It runs, like, the opposite direction to what you would expect it to.
Yeah.
So rather than, if you imagine most guitars, the pickup selector runs kind of diagonally.
Like up and down the guitar.
Well, yeah, up and down the guitar or towards the, it's sort of in line with the, volume knobs. Whereas this is running kind of perpendicular to it. It's really weird, which I assume has been done. So because, you know, he's rocking out on that and he's using his Floyd.
Well, I don't know. Does the original one look like that?
And I assume it's been done so that you don't accidentally go, you know, change your pickup by mistake.
So, yeah, I'm on a website now which catalogues all of his signature models. And it looks like, yeah, the original one is the Kramer. I don't know if these are in order, actually. I'm assuming that they are. Kramer, then a black Paisley Stratocaster, which looks awesome, which is basically like a Floyd, the star inlays, black Paisley, maple neck, looks incredible.
Oh, that sounds good.
Then there's a Japanese Sambora signature, which is just like a Sienna Sunburst Strat. Then you've got the Mexican signature, which is like a white or black Strat, or red as well, with just dot inlays and with a Floyd. And then there's USA ones, which are, the star inlays, the Floyd, and it's like, yeah, Sienna Sunburst, white, and probably black as well, I'd imagine. Although it's got some sort of weird circuit board in it as well. Weird. I don't know what that is. But then he had a double neck Tele.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah, that's what, now double necks, that's what I want to talk
and then,
about.
Yeah, then the ESP LTD SA2, which is the one that looks like a Gibson Sonics, but with a very, very weird...
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and a Paoletti Strat, that looks like it's just handmade for him, and then a load of custom shop Strats, so yeah, that's where we're at, but... how did we get here? Oh, yes, Kramer.
Yeah.
So as well as the originals collection, there's also the modern collection, which actually I think is just basically the guitars they've been doing for a while, the Assault guitars, the Assault Plus and the Assault 220.
Oh, so this is the modern collection is very much, I guess, more their budget line of stuff, isn't it?
Well, I mean, not necessarily, because these go up to, I'm just having a look on pricing now, I think these are... They're kind of more expensive than the basic originals. So the Assault 220, which I guess the closest thing is like...
Which is their single cut. That's their
Eclipse.
It's kind
of ESP Eclipse-esque. Yeah. That's $380. And then the Plus, I'm assuming, is more money.
Man, I am excited about Kramer being back because they are...
829.
They're just a bit cooler than all the other brands doing this sort of thing.
I wouldn't say cooler. It's definitely different. Like, for example, that you know, most of those guitars that are... Les Paul-esque, but shreddy.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of them have a rosewood or an ebony board. Kramers have maple, which gets something different. You've got the reverse hockey stick headstock.
It's a bit more 80s. They're a bit more sticking to their 80s guns a little bit. Also, the D1 bass.
Yes.
Do you remember this bass? They've done this for years. Yeah. They did this when we were all at GAC in the shop. Yeah. Do you remember this bass? It was absolutely fantastic. Like... Pound for pound spec was fantastic considering its price point. It was like a mahogany body, ebony board. It, like the preamp in there sounded excellent. It was like a Music Man style humbucker. I think it was an EMG. I think it
is
an actual licensed pickup. It sounded incredible. And I think this guitar was, what's the price point?
$499.
I mean, yeah, $499. So, you know, what are we looking at? Like 350, 380 quid, something like that.
Yeah, roughly.
But, you know, that's not a lot of money for something with all of these incredibly premium parts. I just remember it being one of those guitars in the bass department in GAC that people would overlook because Kramer only do the one bass and they're certainly not a name as far as bass is concerned. And people would walk out, with, especially if they were looking for guitars like that, they would walk out with active humbucking basses for twice the price that were not as good just because people wouldn't look at these things. I've got a lot of time for Kramer. I'm really glad this brand is back.
Well, two things. The guitars look great, but for the first time in ages, it's like a guitar website that I actually want to stay on and look around. Like the actual website experience is just really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a bit of a weird thing to talk about.
On the front page, that guy's armpits look really smooth.
Yeah.
I'm really into that. Anyway, I can hear something in the distance. Oh, yes, that's right. It is the quacking of the question duck, signalling that it is time for the question segment.
What is happening?
I mean, this podcast.
It's the woofing of the question dog, apparently.
Yeah, well, that is he's getting excited about the question duck being here.
Right, okay. No one likes this.
Anyway, so we've got a few questions. I actually allocated extra time. I put in loads of questions, and now... We're almost out of time.
It never worked. You've always got this idea that we don't have enough to talk about. And every week we run out of time.
I feel like I went off on one about plectrums.
We talked about two things in the news.
Yeah.
Two.
Okay. So before we start doing the actual questions, I want to talk about, listeners and which one of us you all think we are, because on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum, the header image is a picture of all four of us, and one of our listeners, Sarah Garrod, said, I'd like to put names to faces and faces to voices. Can you read out who is who left to right from the header photo? Which I asked her if she could take a stab at who she thought was who to who, left to right. So the image on the header of our Facebook group is Mark, you know, little smiley Mark.
Hello there.
There you go. And then there's me with my big, you know, luscious moustache. Jay Cross towering above everyone else.
He's a tall boy.
With his colourful hat. And then Matt Knight with his cheerful beard and friendly demeanour.
Beardful, you know. Cheered.
Anyway, so Sarah's taken a pop, and so she said, in at number one, the cheeky one with
she's
a high
pops.
Voice. Yeah, so in at number one, so this is a picture of Mark. She's assumed that because of your high-pitched voice that you are the shorter one of the four of us, and so she has guessed that, in fact, you are that Mark is you, and then she's correctly guessed me, as I imagine anyone would, and then
being Matt, the celebrity of the group,
and then Jay she thinks is Matt, and Matt she also thinks is me, which is pretty good, but yeah, there you go. I'm afraid you were almost completely wrong, except for me, Sarah. But
you're the most recognisable because you're the biggest idiot.
Obviously, I am. But moving on to a real question, Aaron Sherman said, "Is the era of big looper based pedal boards over? What are you guys seeing at shows and whatnot? I've been into a smaller board with just a dynamic fuzz and overdrive delay and modulation, getting the most out of the guitar pedals, amps as possible."
I think just cable straight into the amp.
This is ridiculous, yeah. But I have to say, from playing shows where people generally do have larger boards, that boards downsized, and that started with the MS3, but I think has carried on more with sort of Line 6 Helixes and things like the Helix
HX
Stomp, things like that. People are starting to integrate those into boards and minimize boards. People are becoming less afraid of either. People are becoming less afraid of multi-effects, and or multi-effects are getting better, or people are just getting fed up with
tap
patch
dancing.
Cables. Well, no, I mean, because switches get rid of the, you know, that, but you know, it must be one in three, four shows that I go to that are sort of like a math or a post-rock show where something goes wrong with someone's pedal board at some point, because they are such massive boards. There are so many, you know, patch cables going on. People are bound to have errors. And I think people have been reducing boards on account of that.
But surely with the switcher, it's easy to eliminate the problem. Because if you turn a loop on and it doesn't work, it must be those two patch cables.
Yeah.
And if you turn it on and there's no signal, it's either your input cable or your output cable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's you're totally right.
Says to me that these people need to maintain their equipment better.
Yes, definitely. That is
says
not
to me
something.
That these people should not be letting their equipment leave their bedroom.
I mean, absolutely not. But absolutely not.
But I think the MS3 and things like the Helix becoming accepted by, like the Helix being accepted by genres outside of sort of, we've spoken about this before, like how, you know, I think metal was always going to be the genre that was going to go for the Helix because they're not too fussed about having amps on stage. But the fact that the Helix is now being integrated into boards with other pedals and things like that, and it seems to be used by more organic bands as well, I think is naturally causing a smallness of board.
What do you mean more organic bands?
I mean bands that would use amplifiers on stage that would still want valve stuff.
Oh, we see. Okay.
So not organic sounding. You're absolutely right in that sense. I'm thinking of meth bands, which obviously their guitar sounds are anything, you know, but organic, but I think there's still a sort of like a desire to have a valve amp. And you know, people want to spend the money on the respected drive pedals and analog delay pedals and have real space echoes on stage and stuff like that. There's still that
more concern about image. Yeah, I can understand.
Can I just jump in here?
Yeah.
It's on a similar note, talking about real amps and stuff. I got around to watching the Ola England video about the Pod version 2 that you put out a couple of weeks ago, Matt.
I think last week maybe.
Yeah, something like that. Where basically he said, yeah, the first ever kind of multi-effects thing I ever got was a Pod. And he basically did a demo of a Pod 2 on his channel. And it sounded really, really good. Like, for all the changes we've gone through with, you know, all the other things that are available, he just made it sound great. And it does go to show that, you know, with a bit of post-processing, you can make all of these things sound wicked. He did some with the built-in cab modeling that's in there.
Oh, really?
Still sounded really good, but then also did it with the amp modeling and then another IR that he was using on his door, and it sounded even better. It's crazy how good even the older technology still is. And you know, you can pick up a Pod for like £50 and they sound really good. On a similar note, I also watched a video where a guy was comparing to a JMP, like all the way up, recorded in a studio versus the HX Stomp. And there was definitely a difference between the two, but with, again, with a little bit of post-processing, the HX Stomp sounded very, very similar, to the point where, like, you could still tell the difference, but not, there wasn't much of a difference.
Right.
And it was very much that, like, intangible thing, because they were like, maybe it's a bit more bass, let's dial in a bit more bass and see if we can get there, and it wasn't quite right, and they were like, oh, maybe it's something in the mid, let's try and adjust that a little bit, and it wasn't quite there. It's just, you can't replicate that moving air, but the HX Stomp, for something that you could record at home on at home without like miking up an amp and turning it literally all the way up, it sounded great, and you know, any of that will do that job.
I think the thing is, the more that technology goes on, it is difficult to go how much better. I mean, there's obviously more headroom, and you know, there's obviously a better frequency range. But it's a feel thing as well.
Yeah,
you know, I guess it feels more real, if you want to put it in some way. But that's. The better it's got, the better processing, the better you get that like interaction back, the more you sort of play. I think that's the thing. It's like, they still sound really good, and for most people it's good enough.
Yeah,
it's just how it feels for most people, and it's always that next step onto, I guess, trying to capture what is effectively just plugging a guitar straight into an amp.
I wonder if it will go down, if we'll see more companies go down the route of doing similar things to what like the Tone Master has done, which is, you know, taking
single amplifier,
taking one sound and putting that, you know, replicating that in a kind of digital platform.
Yeah.
Because you know, I talked a lot about how much I love the Tone Master Twin, and it's just like, it's made me want to buy a Twin again. You know, I got rid of my Twin because it was, you know, as you were talking about them,
too big.
It's just too loud. You know, too loud, too heavy, and just too inconvenient.
I do think there is an element of unreliability with valves. I certainly think if you were touring or something, it's something to be concerned about. You know, I am worried when I tour with my CTM 300 all valve head, as opposed to touring with an ABM 600, which is just valve preamp.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh well, I know this is going to be fine. And there's an element of being worried when you're taking something all valve. And
I mean,
I think when you're touring, it almost, I would rather sound maybe slightly not as good and have reliability. Like, it was the reliability.
Yeah, because
the most important
like
bit.
Nobody else knows.
Well, exactly. Yeah,
you know. And taking a kind of longer form view on this, there's only like I think 3 factories in the world now who are making valves.
Yeah,
like they're gonna stop at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and unless there comes along a new technology that's able to replicate valves, you know, and does the same thing.
What about new tube?
Exactly. Yeah. No, you're right. Sorry, I take it back. But no, I wonder if that's the way that we'll see people go, rather than, you know, the technology has got to the point where you can replicate basically anything, maybe replicating, taking it, you know, looking backwards almost. And replicating one thing that you really like, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I really like using Tim, the guitarist in my band, as like the blind taste test for
how does Tim feel about this?
for amp sounds, just because he doesn't have any of the pre-ideas that we would have about equipment.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know anything about gear, it's great to actually just give him stuff to try and see what he actually thinks sounds good. Like I've mentioned it before, but I still think when we were tracking guitars, I needed him to have a silent sound in the room, so I gave him a Kemper to play through, and I was like, just find a sound that you like. And he at the time was playing through Orange Rocker 30s, and he found the Rocker 30 sound, and of course it's not named that, so he had no idea that was the preset he was using, but he found that one and was like, yep, this one sounds good. And I just thought,
that's actually
that's a really good sort of, well, to his ear, I guess as much as the thing, but also that completely without knowing and without really caring about the product and its heritage, that he thought the Kemper one was there. You know, and likewise, when we started using Helixes, he really didn't get on with the Orange presets on the Helix and use the Vox ones instead. You know, sort of. I don't think they were the same Orange amps modelled, but he certainly couldn't get that Orange feel out of those in the same way he could the Kemper. But I know it was slightly off topic, but I think it's a really interesting way to. That's what we kind of need, people that don't know anything about what you're supposed to think about the equipment to actually judge if the digital replications of things are in any way accurate.
Yeah.
And we will never be able to judge those things fairly, because we'll always have, you know, a horse in that race, I guess. Anyway, we are very much over time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
Well, at least we're going to be doing a nice short Patreon episode.
Yes, you can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode of Guitar Nerds every week.
Because if you remember, Joe, you said, yeah, no, it's going to be done in half an hour. And I was like, no, it's going to be an hour.
That's right. We're going to.
And then how long was it?
It was an hour.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, so we're going to be continuing over on our Patreon.
People are just in my house.
On patreon.com/guitarnerds. We're going to be doing the second in our 10-part Gear of the Decade series over on Patreon. So each week we're going to be totting up the best bits from 2010 through to 2019, and then deciding upon the best gear products of the entire decade.
So it's an 11-part series.
No, it's 10, because we already decided the best gear of 2019 in Gear of the Year, which was very recent.
All right.
So we're not going to
repeat. I'm the idiot.
No, not at all. Anyway, so to become a Patreon supporter, it costs only $1 a month, and you can enjoy the podcast ad-free and early every week. Plus, you can be a part of our live audience and participate in our semi-regular gear Guitar Nerds live episodes. At the $5 tier, you can enjoy an entire extra episode every week, plus access to our back catalogue of mini-series like the Question Hole, Bar Chords, and the Friday Special. And at the $10 tier, you can become an executive producer and enjoy all these benefits, plus prestigious honour of having your name sung in the podcast outro song. You can follow us on all major social platforms with @GuitarNerds, and you can join us on our Facebook at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Yes, here we go. Jeffrey Wax and Eric Hammer, Mario Turan and Brian Einsler, Gavin Vanderlinden and Jacob McGee, Makizao Kadawaki and Stuart Robson, Robin Butterworth and Neil Milton, Rob Masto and Christian Lundhansen, Keith Adams and Eric Farr, Andrew Goodman Peters, Richard Sudworth. Steve Michael, J.D. Short, Robin Smith, Travis Muncher, and